Hello and welcome.
Bienvenido.
Hey ho.
And assalamu alaikum.
Welcome to AO Access to Success,
the podcast series developed by the AO Access Task Forces
to broaden your perspectives
for personal and professional development.
Today's podcast is hosted by Bail Hamouda, member of the AO Access Officer and Faculty Selection Processes Task Force.
Welcome to the AO Access to Success podcast series. I'm your host, Bail Hamouda, professor of neurosurgery at Cairo University, Egypt, and an AO Access Task Force member. Today, we will be discussing the socioeconomic perspective of thoracolumbar burst fractures, especially the surgical versus non-surgical management. Today, we have two special guests, Charlotte Dandrand and Ulrich Spiegel, and I feel it's better to let them introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Charlotte Dandrand. I'm a spinal neurosurgeon working in Vancouver, Canada, the Vancouver General Hospital. I'm an associate member of the AO Knowledge from Trauma and Infection.
And I'm Ulrich Spiegel. I'm working in Munich at the Munich Clinics in Hallaching, specialized in spine and trauma surgery. I'm a spine and orthopedic surgeon, and I'm similarly an associate member of the Knowledge Forum of Trauma and Infections. Hello.
Hi, Charlotte, and hi, Ulrich. Congratulations on your research focusing on improving the outcomes of thoracolumbar burst fractures, especially with personalization of the management plan. And to start with Charlotte, your study presented an analysis comparing surgical and non-surgical treatments. What were the key findings from your research?
As you may all know in the audience and here, there's been an ongoing controversy and debate whether surgical management or non-surgical management at thoracolumbar burst fracture without neurological deafness was best. Many school of thoughts or proponent of surgical management exists around the world, and there are many school of thoughts that prefer non-surgical management of those fractures. Our research really tried to solve this ongoing debate. And we notably conducted an economic analysis, a cost-utility analysis, comparing surgery to non-surgical treatment. And when we took consideration of the direct and indirect costs, our results show that there's a dominance of surgical treatment over non-surgical treatment at 2 years and on the lifetime horizon. And this dominance resided mostly in the indirect costs. When we mention indirect costs, we're talking mostly about the productivity loss of the patient, meaning their inability to work or their delayed return to work, and also the time off work for the caregiver of those patients. So this has a societal impact if the patient and the caregiver are not able to return to work or their level of productivity. And that economically showed that surgical treatment of those type of fracture was dominant.
And in your research, you emphasize that the importance of personalized treatment for thoracolumbar burst fracture based on this result. You mentioned that a spinal tumor represents an acute loss of functioning. How do you think that the patient's quality of life, such as their coping mechanism or daily responsibilities, factor into this decision-making process?
A spinal trauma, like many of the trauma, are an acute loss of functioning for a patient. And treatment should aim to return patient to their pre-injury level of functioning as quickly as possible, or as close to that pre-injury level of functioning as possible. And when treating a patient with a thoracolumbar burst fracture without neurological deficits, we're mostly talking about pain and painful symptoms that may prevent them to return to that pre-injury level of functioning. Therefore, when you choose the best treatment for that patient, you have to consider the personal or the individual characteristics of that patient. Is this patient a working patient? What type of work do they do? Are they a caregiver of someone, or is there someone that's a caregiver of them? And what are their pain coping mechanism? As we all know, as spine surgeon, pain is a very subjective and individualized experience, and each patient may cope better or worse with pain. So when deciding whether you treat that person surgically or not, and those are all factors that you have to consider and assess.
Okay, that's a very comprehensive list. And I would like to know Ulrich's input about this. Do you think that other factors which can influence the decision-making in the treatment of thoracolumbar fracture, other than the one that Charlotte has just mentioned?
Well, Charlotte already mentioned several of the factors that influence it, but to sum it up, it's first of all, what she said already, the economic background. What kind of work is he or she doing? Work just on the laptop or hard work with carrying things around, having to lift people, or even young mothers having to lift babies or small kids. That's all need to be considered because that needs to work. And that's, first of all, part of it. The next thing is, of course, just do you have enough money to be off work for a longer distance, particularly in countries where this is not afforded by the insurance. And that's another thing what needs to think about, that you can afford it being off work, the second thing. And the next thing is, what are your plans in the future? And for example, if you're a sport active patient and you plan next year a big trip, you want to be there again. You maybe paid already some money to do it or planned it with friends, whatever, and you want to make sure to be there, then you want to make the safest way to get there. All this needs to be put together to make an individual decision. And that's always based combined the willing of the patient and, of course, the physician who is leading the treatment.
How do you approach decision making in a way that accounts for all the individual patient characteristics? How can this personalization improve the outcomes, particularly when gender does not play a significant role in the treatment choice?
Well, I think the most important part, first of all, is to talk with the patient and to sum up what course is expected so that the patient can make a good decision on his own. And therefore, he needs to be educated. And part of our information in the study we can deliver the patient is more information how the time span works, when he might be able to work again, in average, of course, when he might to be in the same or similar situation that he was prior trauma. And then the patient needs to decide on his own, of course. And we need to give him the best information we can give for him and her. And that's, I think, our need to offer the patient. And that's, I think, most what we get out of here. And then the patient needs to get his first decision based on this information, what his plans, what his duties, what is his wishes. And that's, I think, what we need to offer the patient.
Yeah, that's very well said, Ulrich, here. As we have discussed the different aspects that affect the decision to do a surgical and non-surgical management, different countries and different regions, different background education. Just my question is that within the results of this multicentric study, have there been any difference regarding the decision affected by being the surgeon, a male or a female surgeon?
We have conducted another study looking at the gender differences in terms of outcome. We have not looked at whether the gender of the surgeon affected decision-making and the result. In my personal experience, I don't think gender of the surgeon necessarily affects the decision-making. Certainly, there's gender characteristics in terms maybe evaluating the patient and being more sensitive or less sensitive to certain aspects of the patient experience. However, I don't think ultimately the decision-making is different depending on the gender of the surgeon. Now, in terms of the gender of the patient, our other paper highlights differences in terms of the outcomes, in terms of the ODI in the long term. That being said, I don't think the message of the paper is to state that the genders should be treated differently, but it simply highlights that there are individual characteristics to each patient that have to be taken into account. And ODI, which is a tool that measures pain and how pain affects functional status in the day-to-day lives, I think inherently, the way societies are constructed, each gender can have different responsibilities or different functional status, and the ODI may simply reflect this. So the differences in gender that we observed in terms of the outcome, I think, was simply reflected by the real world life reality of each gender being different.
Okay. And for Ulrich, just the same question to Charlotte. Do you think that the gender of the surgeon or the gender of the patient does make effect or a difference in choosing the management plan?
It is really a tough question because in respect of gender of the physician or the surgeon, we have no data. So we can speculate. I think I agree with Charlotte that it makes no difference. However, I'm not sure. And I still think the most influence factor is the region where you work, meaning what teaching you had and what's common. That's, I think, the most important fact right now. But maybe the search and gender makes a difference. I'm not sure either. I rather doubt it. Concerning the patient, we've seen there is a difference, yes. And I totally agree that makes no difference how we treat them, but it makes a difference how we inform the patients, because we can tell based on the results, based on gender, that there might be a slight difference, and that will be a part of the information process, what we should give the patients. And the patient needs to decide what kind of treatment he or she wants, and that this needs to be respected.
Definitely. That's a good way to go. And for Charlotte, your study was a multi-center international effort, actually, incorporating different centers from different countries. How did this different regional practice influence your findings?
Actually, that's one of the very interesting findings of the study. This international data collection allowed us to describe and characterize the different school of thoughts that we know exist worldwide, which I don't believe has been characterized many times before. We know from meetings, discussion at conferences, or individualized paper that come out of different countries that, for example, in Europe, there's a stronger preference for surgical management of those fractures. But if you look at North America and Australia, there's a preference for non-operative management. This paper not only tried to compare outcome of surgery versus non-surgery, but characterize those different school of thoughts that exist worldwide. So that has been an interesting finding of the study that will certainly explore with additional analysis and characterize and present to the spinal surgery community.
Interested, just to know, because being from the Middle East, if there is any characteristic management approach in the Middle East region for thoracolumbar burst fracture?
Yeah, actually, if you take the region of the Middle East, we notice in our results that there's a strong preference for surgical treatment of those fractures in the Middle East. Similarly to India, like both Middle East and India had the strongest predilection or strongest proportion of patients receiving surgery. Just above 90% of the patients recruited in the Middle East received surgical management and the A3 and A4 fractures.
I do agree, Charlotte, that Middle East usually prefer surgical intervention rather than non-surgical intervention. And most patients want a swift and rapid recovery. But I'm interested through what's about North America. From your practice, what do you think?
So my local practice and my center were quite conservative with those fractures. However, that being said, with the recent evidence that surgery may be cost effective and there's a signal in the results that it may have faster recovery, we have to see in the recent past we've slowly incorporated more surgery as a treatment management. However, that being said, in our results from the study that's been collecting data for the last 10 years or so, we clearly see a strong preference in North America for non-surgical treatment. About 75% of those fractures are actually treated non-operatively in North America, which is quite different than the Middle East and India that we were just discussing before.
And for Orish, actually you mentioned that a surgeon has to be prepared early during the training pathway about opening the options for surgical and non-surgical management. Do you think there is some sort of selection bias here or unconscious bias about how he has been trained, his mentors, his hospital protocol, the community surrounding him, affecting his decision or how he proposed to the patient surgical versus non-surgical management?
Well, I think that's a huge bias, actually, because you treat the patient normally the best way you think you treat them. And of course, the experience you have majorly triggers you to use the treatment you are used to. First of all, what you experienced on your own, and of course, what you're taught to, particularly at the regional or local hospitals. Of course, you're reading, and that's probably the main huge difference we see now between the areas, like in North America, in Europe, or Middle East, where there are quite differences in the rate of surgeries. That is majorly dependent on the teaching situation and the way treatment is offered. I do think that's a major bias the people and the teachers and the physicians have in each region.
And Charlotte, from the research, your own experience, what improvement would you like to see in the management of thoracolumbar burst fractures, both locally and internationally, especially from the global health perspective?
I think one aspect that would be important to discuss and further reflect on is the different preference or school of thoughts that we've noticed. It would be better if the international spinal surgery community could come to somewhat of a consensus on what is the best treatment. It may be also that it's very individualized treatment, and we can say still a variation in treatment. But I think right now there is lack of consensus among the international spinal community. So for everybody to come together and maybe for the old spine knowledge from trauma and infection to build strong recommendation and guidelines to be used across all regions, and that would be applicable in all regions, I think would be a great improvement in the treatment of tracheolumbar bursa fracture.
The next question is actually for you both, Charlotte and Ulrich. What do you think are the possible benefits of personalized treatment? Start with Ulrich.
Again, I think the most satisfaction that can be achieved is if the patient makes his own decision on the best information that's available. And if you give the patient this information, if we have the data, and of course have guidelines and give the patient the information, I think then the patient, first of all, decides on his own, and then is most satisfied because it's his own decision. And of course, our job is to give him the information and of course, give him and avail him the best treatment, surgically and non-surgically. And I think that's what we need to do. And that's our job.
Hopefully, yes, we'll reach this. And Charlotte, from your point of view, yeah.
Yeah, I cannot agree with Ulrich. We're having more and more high quality studies come out on this very important question. And we're getting answers on how this treatment should actually be personalized. And then our role, as Ulrich mentioned, is really to present this evidence to the patient in a way that can be understood well by the patient. And then in the case where both option of surgery versus non-surgery have not yielded results that make one treatment way superior than the other, then involving the patient significantly in terms of the decision-making, I think is important. And we present the evidence and then the patient in the team with the physician can decide what is the best individualized treatment for the patient in question.
Okay, it's been an enlightening conversation today, and it seemed that evidence may support the use of both surgical and non-surgical approaches, but also it seemed that personalizations of the treatment ensure that the patient receives the most appropriate treatment based on their own specific life situation and preferences, which will ultimately lead to a better overall outcomes. At the end, I would like to thank you, Charlotte and Ulrich, so much for joining us today and for sharing your insights on the economic and clinical consideration for the thoracolumbar bursa fracture management. It has been a pleasure hosting you today.
Thank you for listening to the AO Access to Success podcast series.
Be sure to visit our webpage to facilitate your personal and professional development
by exploring dimensions of leadership
at AO Foundation, who we are, about AO Access,
to join the conversation.